Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Talk Live, Journeys into Mind, Heart, and Soul. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, inviting you to come on the journey, join in the quest. Spirit Talk Live is our monthly forum for exploring the great questions of existence, for joining in the quest to find meaning and worth in life through intellectual inquiry and sacred spirit. There's a worldwide conversation for spiritual seekers and rational empiricists, for people of all religions and of no religion, of all faiths and of no faith, because here on Spirit Talk Live, everything is sacred and nothing is sacred. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to this month's edition of Spirit Talk Live. We are very glad you're here. We thank you for being with us. And as always, let me remind you of my newest book, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People, A Compelling Appraisal of the State of Our Present-Day World, and a Bold, Visionary, Spiritual Blueprint for its Transformation and Evolution through Radical Loving and Awesome Holiness, A Call to Oneness, A Promise of That Earth Can Be Eden Once Again. It's published by Monkfish, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People. If you want more information about the book, it is at Radical, www, you know, on the web, as you know, radicallovingbook.com. And there you can find some comments about it and some discussion about it. It's available in bookstores and on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. It is a very important book for this time in our political, religious, social, cultural life, and I hope you'll take a look at it. Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People, Monkfish Publishing. And so, today, I am thrilled to welcome to Spirit Talk Live a dear colleague and a brilliant rabbi. Rabbi Sheldon Lewis is the Rabbi Emeritus of Congregation Kol Emet in Palo Alto, California, a community that he served with distinction for decades. His book, Letters Home, which we'll ask him about in a few minutes, is a memoir of his days as an Army chaplain in Vietnam. Now he comes to discuss his newest book, How Precious the Ground on Which We Stand, Jewish values, and actually, I would say, spiritual values as well, that can save the earth. He is a climate activist. He teaches sacred texts as a manifesto to cherish and preserve the earth as a divine creation and inspire us to do the work to save our precious planet. So coming to us from his offices and home in Palo Alto, California, it is my great pleasure to welcome to Spirit Talk Live, Rabbi Sheldon Lewis. Rabbi, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Wayne. I've been looking forward to this time, really, and it's great to be in touch again.
Well, Rabbi Lewis, full disclosure, we grew up in the same neighborhood in the south side of Chicago. You were a little further west, but we near the lake didn't hold that against you. It's quite all right. I have watched your career far ahead of mine for many years, and you it is absolutely true. You were beloved by your congregation. I know this because my sister-in-law was a member of your congregation for many years and adored you as her rabbi. This book is called The Precious Ground on Which We Stand, But before we talk about this book, by Hakodesh Press, by the way, Hakodesh Press, but before we talk about this book, I want to mention just for a moment your book, Letters Home, from being an Army chaplain in Vietnam. You volunteered in a time when everybody else was trying to stay as far away from Vietnam as possible. My seminary, slightly different from yours, required us as rabbinical students to join the military reserves and build up rank and over the years. And then had we been called, we would have gone. The year ahead of me, one of my schoolmates went to the Navy, one went to the Army. In my year, the war was winding down, and so they didn't need any more Army chaplains, and they sent me an honorable discharge, so I didn't have to serve. I would have been at age 25 or 26, whatever I was, and I would have been horrible as a chaplain, but okay, so God was watching out for not only me, but for the people that I would have had to serve. But your seminary, Jewish Logic Seminary of America, it was a volunteer, not required, and you volunteered. So, first of all, please tell us why. Why did you volunteer to be a chaplain in Vietnam? And tell us just a tiny, tiny bit. It could be a whole program in itself. A tiny bit about some of your experiences.
Yes. It was such a conflicted time. And I, for full disclosure, I was totally opposed to the war, too. And in New York City, where I was a student, was an epicenter of protest. But it was a very difficult time. But I knew that it was a time of the draft. Most people, rather than protesting or fleeing the country or going to prison even, instead of accepting the draft, most people went to serve their country, even with all their doubts about this mission. And finally, after a long struggle, an inward struggle, I felt that we, as rabbis, owed them our presence. And finally, that's why I decided to go. And I might just add that I wrote this memoir 50 years, essentially 50 years after serving, and it... And part of the reason for that was that when we came back, we were not welcomed back. And it was a really, really difficult time to serve and to return to civilian life where really no one wanted to hear about our experiences. So anyway, thank you for asking. It was absolutely a seminal period in my life, a formative period for me.
And you served with great distinction, and it's a cliche, but thank you for your service. And we know a colleague who was also a Vietnam chaplain at about the same time, and he came back and tried to serve congregations, and just he couldn't do it, and he sold insurance for the rest of his life. A terrible loss for the American rabbinate. But he was marked by that experience. You seem to survive. Not only well, but brilliantly.
Well, I did survive, and my mission kept me, really guarded me from the worst of experiences in Vietnam. I wasn't on the front lines, but I did see the consequences of what happened on the front lines, and so I was spared some of the worst of it, but it marked me. It definitely marked me to this day.
Well, a brilliant beginning to a brilliant career. Reading your book, How Precious the Ground on Which We Stand, published by Hakodesh Press, it is clear that you were deeply influenced by your teacher, Rabbi Dr. Abraham Joshua Heschel, of blessed memory. And we've referred to Dr. Heschel many, many, many times on this program over these 15 years that we've been doing this Spirit Talk Live here on HealthyLife.net. I was not a direct student of his, but his writings have influenced me tremendously. I would say that my rabbinic lineage goes through him. And just tell our readers, our listeners, just a little bit about Dr. Heschel, his theology, and his influence on you.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that's a question that I love to receive, because I was privileged to be a student. I felt very close to him every time I had a chance to hear him and study with him. I tried to take advantage. I think I absorbed him really, and part of it was because he was deeply spiritual. So deeply formed by Jewish textual tradition and Jewish values, and he was so deeply involved in the affairs of the day. I was actually present one really dramatic moment at Riverside Church in New York, across the street from the seminary, when he and Martin Luther King appeared together, and Martin Luther King at Heschel's urging came out against the war in Vietnam, which was a very difficult thing for him to do, to balance that and his work in civil rights. And so, yeah, and in terms of so many things that I learned from him, but he was such an eloquent spokesman about how trying to live a life of wonder and awe in the face of the world. And that's one of the things that I certainly mention in this book, that I learned from him, and how he felt that maintaining a sense of wonder as we encounter the world around us with all its beauty and magnificence, that if we manage to hold on to that wonder, that we will also find the energy and the courage to preserve what's around us, to preserve the earth. He says in one place in God in Search of Man, one of his great books, that if we lose a sense of wonder, we really risk the perishing of the earth. And so it was just one of the many things that I learned from him.
And he taught us about radical amazement, eh?
Yes, that's right. That was his key phrase, and one of the things that we find in his work again and again.
Right, a book about him. One of his students, Rabbi Dresner Alushalom, asked him what he asked for in life, and his response was, "I asked for wonder."
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, I think what he struggles with, and perhaps what we all struggle with, is that, well, when we're born into the world, there's a natural sense of wonder that we feel with just everything that we begin to experience, but that begins to diminish as we grow, and it's hard, but not impossible, to struggle against that natural tendency just to take things for granted, take the world for granted, and all of its wonders. And so he wrote and struggled and taught us to and showed us the way to maintain that sense of wonder.
So, Rabbi Lewis, our generation of rabbis were certainly political activists, and for some it's been hunger, and for some it's been homelessness, and for some it's been anti-war, and for some it's been pro-Israel, and for you it seems to have evolved into your activism for the climate. And this book is, in many ways, your manifesto about how to save this earth on which we live. You write there that all the other issues become non-issues if we don't have an earth on which to live, a planet on which to live. So what brought you to this kind of activism for climate? I know your congregation, under your leadership, very, very active in this issue. Of all the things that could have captured your imagination, why this?
Yes. Well, I appreciate this question because I struggle with it. I'm drawn as you and so many of our colleagues are drawn and hearing people everywhere to the issues that we face: gun violence and hunger and homelessness and bigotry and war and peace, of course, and we terrible things in Israel and Gaza now, and so many things, and issues of justice, but and all of them need attention all at once, complete attention. And yet, I do see this as kind of an or issue, as you just said. I mean, it's like the platform on which all of our other crises need to be confronted. And also, I think, I don't think there's anyone now who isn't affected directly. I mean, it isn't just a distant warning from scientists about climate change. It's something we feel, and, you know, in Southern California, the wildfires that burn as we are speaking today, and so many scorching temperatures in Phoenix and floods and so many things. We're all touched by it. And if we don't attend to this, then we won't have the wherewithal to deal with the other crises. So it's like, to me, it's like we can't ignore the other things at the same time, but this is like a core issue that underpins all the others. I remember when I wrote many years ago, really, a book about peacemaking, they claimed that peace was the kind of the war issue. Without an arena of peace, one couldn't engage with other issues if we didn't succeed in having peace. I agreed with that, and I understand that, but I think that even beyond peacemaking, having a habitable earth is fundamental for us to thrive and for us to have the energy and the attention that other problems deserve.
And so you become our teacher in showing us how to preserve the earth, the planet on which we live. And you do this, once again, very, very brilliantly, by taking the five books of the Torah, the five books of the Hebrew Bible, first five books, some known as the Pentateuch, and you give us each of those books and a lesson from each of those books that build one upon the other to teach us how to preserve the planet on which we live. So, in talking about Genesis, for example, the first chapter, the first book of the Bible, you talk about recreating the world, we, human beings, recreating the world the way God created the world in the beginning. So, who are we to recreate the world? Who are we to compare ourselves to God? But you teach us brilliantly that we are the ones who must do it. Rabbi Lewis, talk to us about we recreating the earth.
Yes. I know it's an audacious thing to say that we can recreate the world, but I think our sages really believe that. I think it's built into lessons in the Torah. And it starts even with the very first word in Hebrew, Bereshit, which is usually translated in the beginning, but some Hasidic commentators have reinterpreted that word because of its peculiar grammar to mean that the world was created with the quality of beginning, that is, that built into it somehow, mysteriously, is that it can be, it's not a one-off thing that it was recreated. It was created by God, but then we have the power, since we are, and maybe this is part of the meaning of being in the image of God. One of the seminal teachings of the first chapter of Genesis, that we have the power to make up for our errors, and we've made a big mess of the world. we have the power to do something about it. And that's actually in the book of Exodus, which we can talk about it in a bit, there's actually an example of that, that we actually have the power to recreate.
And what's the example of that? How do we... What is the text
teaching? The example of that is, I mean, first of all, it's not clear in Genesis who is the agent who can recreate. Is it? Is that what human beings can do, or not? But the building of the tabernacle in the second book of the Bible, in the book of Exodus, and maybe. If you want, I'd be happy to talk about it in more detail. But the rabbi saw in that an example of, in miniature, in microcosm, of the effort of doing that act in the wilderness was an act of recreation.
And we will find out how we are to recreate the world which God created originally. And I want to go back to how we name things the way Adam did originally. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, along with Rabbi Sheldon Lewis, the author of How Precious the Ground on Which We Stand, Jewish Values, Religious Values, Spiritual Values That Could Save the Earth. We'll be back after these messages, as always, inviting you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
Save the Animals Today offers a respectable retirement and end-of-life experience for all the horses that have been abandoned as they age. Not a day goes by that people don't call Save the Animals Today looking for a place for their horses. Patty and the folks at Save the Animals Today do their best to bring as many horses as they possibly can to beautiful Dudette Ranch to love them and care for them. Dudette Ranch is a special place. Horses and other farm animals enjoy the peaceful sanctuary of the lovely hills north of San Diego. Volunteers of all ages come to interact with and take care of these wonderful creatures. Older folks who had horses when they were growing up and now have some free time especially enjoy helping around the barn with animals who want the extra attention. Save the Animals Today would like to provide shelter for every farm animal who needs rescue. Right now, there's a waiting list. Dudette Ranch needs your help. The horses need your help. You can help these magnificent animals by making a tax-deductible donation to Save the Animals Today. $25 will make a difference, and $25 a month will mean another older horse will enjoy its older years, loved and cared for. If you want to help even more, visit the website at www.savetheanimalstoday.org.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
Spirit Talk Live, I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, along with Rabbi Sheldon Lewis, the author of How Precious the Ground on Which We Stand, HaKodesh Press. And we're talking about actually being in the image of God, how we recreate the earth and the planet, and we can save it by recreating it, because we've ruined it in so many ways, and now we have the opportunity to save it. So before we come back to talking about how the model of building tabernacle in the desert is a model for us for rebuilding the earth, I want to go back to Genesis for just a moment, where you teach us, Rabbi Lewis, about naming things, that Adam named things, and we get to name when we name something. Your line is giving names to countless stars, for example, each one unique and noticed. Similarly, naming on earth or in the heavens reflects the fact that a creature or a facet of nature is accorded its own status, and thus the first step toward caring, naming emulates God. What a brilliant insight.
Yes, and you know, I think that that task of naming, which according to Genesis is one of the first tasks given to Adam and Eve, and they're actually Adam names Eve too, and it's kind of overlooked, but I really was taken by that in light of thinking about our powers and what we need to do towards working in ourselves in order to be up to this task of healing the planet. That it's a natural thing to do. There's no place, hardly wherever we go, that we don't name not only people and animals and plants, but places, beautiful, rivers and mountains and everything. It's a propensity to name. And naming can be casual, of course, but it also can be really meaningful, that we really notice, that we really are entering into a relationship, and that we really care. And of course, that's expressed especially when we name our own children, that we're blessed with, that's such a moment that we focus on and we choose so carefully. But it's not only a word, it's the child is invested with all of our hopes for the future, and it's like a covenant that we're not going to ever violate. It's a lifetime covenant, and I think that's what I read in that now, that we have to take that seriously and look at everything around us with that kind of covenantal spirit, mm-hmm. that we're not going to let go of it. We're gonna guard it, and if it's been messed up, we're going to try to fix what we've done.
Right, the word that we use in Hebrew, which is chesed, which we usually translate as loving kindness or something like that. The late great president of the Hebrew Union College, Dr. Nelson Glick, wrote his doctoral dissertation saying that chesed in the Bible means covenantal love, that we are in a covenantal relationship with God, and as you point out, then we are in a covenantal relationship with our children. What a brilliant insight. Thank you so much.
Yes. It sounds like it may link to your new book, too, about radical loving.
So you're teaching us about building the sanctuary in the desert, and then you also teach us about Shabbat, the Sabbath, where we cease from work and rest, and you write, the underlying principle for the prohibitions about ceasing from work, don't create that once each week, pull us back from causing any change in the world. Wow, once again, a brilliant insight. What does that mean to you?
Well, that I think is fundamental in the book and really in my reading of Torah through this lens of climate. It is that we are given such power in the world from the beginning, again from the first chapter. We're given power over the world around us. But once each week, we're reminded that the world doesn't really belong to us. We're custodians. We're not owners of it. And the Sabbath is, I think, just an immense structure in time to teach us to pull back and to be reminded that even if 6 days a week we work to shape the world and sometimes for good and then often not for good, that on the Sabbath we are reminded that we're not the masters, we're not the owners, and so many of the details of the traditional Sabbath observance are pulling back from a sense of mastery. We don't change the world, as you said, on that day, and one day every 7 days for all of our lives, we step back as a reminder of the limits of our power.
You use the word custodian. Custodian in modern parlance has become, you know, almost like the maintenance person, the person who takes care of the grounds, but it's a much, much deeper concept, isn't it? That when we are custodians of the earth.
Yes, you know, when Adam and Eve are placed in the Garden of Eden and they're told, and the overall thing they're told before they're told what not to eat, when to fruit from one particular tree, they're told in Hebrew, to work it and to guard it. And that phrase, I think, to me, is meant not just for Adam and Eve, but for our general mission statement, to work it. We have to shape the world. We can do that, hopefully for good, but to guard it. And incidentally, the word to work it, as you know, it really has a double meaning. It has a meaning of service, too. It's used in the Bible as same words for service of God. So one can read that phrase, replace in the garden, to serve it and to guard it. And that's, I think, a deeper meaning of custodianship.
And so how do we become the custodians? We'll find out from Rabbi Sheldon Lewis, the author of How Precious the Ground on Which We Stand, HaKodesh Press, Jewish Values, Religious Values, Spiritual Values That Could Save the Earth. It's a brilliant, brilliant compilation of biblical texts showing us how the ancient text is so contemporary and so modern and really, really can affect our lives so deeply if we only listen and follow. So this is a tremendous lesson in custodianship, and we'll find out about humility as well. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, along with Rabbi Sheldon Lewis. This is Spirit Talk Live. As always, we invite you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
In 1972, Sur La Table opened in Seattle, selling hard-to-find kitchen items, and now they have 55 stores nationwide, offering kitchen tools from around the world to prepare any cuisine. Sur La Table has a full range of houseware and kitchen products, even books and food. Visit a Sur La Table store, or better yet, for faster service, go to the HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Sur La Table. With the best products, gift cards, and sale items, you can be on your way to being a first-class cook right now.
Do you wonder what is happening in our world? Do you wonder what the forces of the universe are doing to us? Is your life affected by the ebb and flow of events over which you seem to have little control? The answers to these questions and more can be found in the internet publication Cosmic Times, Spiritual News You Can Use, a bi-monthly channel transmission from Ellen Kaufman Dossick. Since 1994, the Cosmic Times has offered detailed information about what is happening energetically in our cosmos and how we can best support the emerging consciousness within ourselves and our world. Many people feel like the Cosmic Times keeps them sane in a seemingly crazy world, lifts their vibrations, and supports their continuing growth and expansion. You can subscribe to the Cosmic Times by going to the website www.soulmemorydiscovery.com. Join the thousands who benefit from the wisdom and insights in the Cosmic Times and receive spiritual news you can use. www.soulmemorydiscovery.com.
Information, entertainment, worldwide. HealthyLife.net.
This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, along with Rabbi Sheldon Lewis. Quite a conversation today. Every once in a while I am in awe of one of my colleagues who is so brilliant, so insightful, so analytical, and uses our tradition so well to give us lessons for our contemporary lives. Rabbi Lewis, I want to discuss with you a portion that is very, very difficult. It is from the book of Deuteronomy, and it has been transferred into our prayer book. Basically, I'm not going to quote the entire thing, but it says, "V'hayayim Shema, if you listen to me," says God, "if you listen to me and follow my injunctions, follow my commandments, I will give you the rain in its season, and I will give you the produce of the land. But if you don't follow my commands, I will shut up the heavens, and there won't be any produce, and you'll be hungry." Now, you know, to a modern ear, this sounds pretty strange. If I don't follow God's rules, will a saber-toothed tiger walk down my street and consume me? Will I starve to death because there won't be any groceries on the supermarket shelves? And on the other hand, there is an ancient wisdom to this teaching. So I'm going to ask you to talk to us about this particular paragraph and what it means in terms of saving the earth on which we live.
Yes. Again, I really also really appreciate this question, because that paragraph, which is central in the liturgy, traditionally it's said twice a day, every day throughout one's life. And it flies in the face of experience, even as I think it's difficult, because it doesn't seem to align with the way we see the world. In fact, sometimes it seems opposite, that good people who really strive to be good and to lead upright lives are not rewarded, and anyway, the opposite can be true too, for those who are really violate everything. So I think the history of that passage, it's been troubled, and I think some people, and even there were some prayer books that were published in the more liberal movements, published without it, because it was so troubling. But I always, even before thinking about it through the lens of climate, I thought of it as kind of a general statement that somehow we, that is the human species, has to somehow live morally in alignment with the earth. And if we don't, somehow we mess up in all ways, morally, then somehow that's our niche in nature, and if we mess up, then it's going to be reflected, even though we don't necessarily see it day by day. But now, in this era, this paragraph, I think, now seems to be written in bold. When I read it every day, it seems to be written in bold. That is, because now our moral failing has been directed against the world itself, against the earth. We've polluted and over-emitted and taxed all the things that fossil fuels that have been drawn out of the earth, and so many things that we've done that damage the waters, the air quality, the earth itself. And now we see the earth reacting to that. So we are at risk of making the earth uninhabitable by our direct actions of assault on the world around us, which is our earth, which we depend on for everything that we hold dear. And so now, that's the way I think it's possible to read that paragraph, that if we don't listen to the commandments about caring for the world around us and plants and animals and the air and water and the earth itself, then we are seeing day by day already gradually increasing the dire consequences of not caring for the earth.
In essence, what you're saying is, God says to us, I've given you this precious gift, this gorgeous world in which to live, with its soaring mountains and its rushing seas and its green fields and its puffy clouds and the blue skies. And if you take care of it, it'll be there for you. And if you violate it, you won't have a place to live anymore.
Yes.
That's quite a message. That's quite a message from God, isn't it?
I mean, that paragraph, sometimes in the past, and reading it day by day, I should go through it quite quickly and go on to the next prayer. But now it stands out because I think it really speaks to this moment.
Right. And so, so many holidays and observances and rituals remind us all the time, and we've sometimes created rituals by rote or observed rituals and holidays by rote, but you bring us back to remembering their real purpose, their real meaning. After all, religion in ancient times was deeply agricultural, and it's just in the last few hundred years of civilization when we've moved away from agriculture into industry and cities. But the ancient holiday structure is to remind us to care for the earth. Yes.
Oh, absolutely, And to remember our place on the earth, again, that we're not the owners. One thing, for example, is just say we, rituals throughout the year are very potent. For example, farmers in ancient times and herders would bring their first fruits and their first fruits as a gift to the central sanctuary and to place in a way before the priests and before God, and the first animals to be born. And when you think of it, here, if you work really hard and you are a farmer or a herder, and the first fruits are so precious, and you're told to take them and to give them back, if you will. And it's so powerful, that's a powerful thing. The only logic that I can think of in that is that it's a teaching that it's not really yours. I mean, you worked hard, but who gave you the power to work hard? Who gave you the earth on which things would grow, or the power to raise animals? Who gave, who's, is the source of all of those things. And I think the rituals of the year teach us that you think it's yours, you have worked hard to your credit, but it's not really yours. You owe gratitude for it and to take care of it.
Right. So even though you think it's yours, actually the Lord is the Lord, landlord.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Exactly. That's
God's plan.
And if we get a chance, we could talk a little bit about the sabbatical year and the Jubilee year, which even teach that even again more forcefully.
And those were the purpose?
I think so. I mean, I think each one of those enshrines the idea of giving up mastery, giving up a sense of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And every way that we can talk about this further in more detail, if you like, step by step, you're stripped of the signs of ownership and reminded that you're the custodian. You're not the ultimate owner.
Well, when we come back for our final segment, we are going to ask Rabbi Lewis about what I call tachlis, the nitty-gritty. We've been very theoretical, we've been very philosophical, we've been very theological, and now we're going to find out how we're going to get our hands dirty in doing and taking ownership of the problem at hand and how to begin to fix it. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dussek, along with Rabbi Sheldon Lewis, the author of How Precious the Ground on Which We Stand. We'll be back after these messages, as always, inviting you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic and expensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to Bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Rabbi Dr. Wayne Dossick is the award-winning author of 8 best-selling books. Living Judaism, The Complete Guide to Jewish Belief, Tradition, and Practice, is now a classic, used in synagogues, churches, seminaries, and universities throughout the country as the basic introduction to Judaism text, and in homes as the perfect one-volume reference to Jewish faith and observance. 20-Minute Kabbalah, co-written with his wife Ellen Kaufman Dossick, uses Tree of Life mysticism to offer a daily personal spiritual practice that brings you to God, your soul knowing, and your heart's desires. The accompanying audio CD, angelically sung by cantor Kathy Robbins, guides you through all the sweet and holy chants. These and other fine books by Rabbi Dossick, including When Life Hurts and Soul Judaism, are available at Amazon.com. For more information about Indigo Children, visit the website www.soulbysoul.com. And for more information about Kabbalah, visit the website www.20minutekabbalah.com. Let Wayne Dossick's books expand your knowledge and enrich your life.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
It's Spirit Talk Live. I'm here, Rabbi Wayne Dossick, with Rabbi Sheldon Lewis. We're talking about his book, How Precious the Ground on Which We Stand, Jewish Values that Could Save the Earth. Rabbi Lewis, how do we get a copy of the book if we want one?
Well, thank you. I of course, it is available on Amazon. It's not. This is from a green press, so it's only printed on demand. And it, my press, Hakodesh Press in Europe, is possible to get it there, but then the shipping is complicated. If anyone wants a copy inscribed, I would be more than happy to send it to you. If you let me know, I can give you my email. Should I just say my email address?
Sure, please.
Okay, it's Shelley, Shelly dot Lewis, Lewis, at gmail.com. That's Shelley, Shelly dot Lewis, at gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to send you out a copy. Just let me know that. Whatever you'd like.
So grab this book immediately, folks. It's a very, very important book. So how do we take ownership? How do we take ownership of this problem, this gigantic problem, this problem that if we don't solve it, our grandchildren may not have a planet on which to live? I know that sounds alarmist, but it's time for alarm. What do we do in terms of tachlis, in terms of the nitty-gritty of how to solve this problem? I know that you have a group in your congregation where you are Rabbi Emeritus. Tell us about that group and tell us what we can do practically to save the earth.
Yes. I think this is a case where we depend on every other person who shares this planet with us, and we depend on each other, and I think it's a time for everyone to be on board in whatever way we can. Now, of course, moving the needle is not easy on this, on the whole globe, but as I'm sure many know, so much has been done and so much is being done. The big things are really at the hands of corporations and government, and the role that we can play is to make sure that we send to the centers of power, that we elect people who care about climate and don't want to disregard climate. So that's an important thing about supporting candidates who will really care desperately about the welfare of our planet. But in our individual lives, we can do things too. We all have a carbon footprint, and I'm not an expert on this by any means, but what we do, for example, in our congregation is we encourage people, for example, not to be careful about food waste, but we know that about a third of the food that we cultivate in this country goes to waste, even at the same time that so many people are hungry and are not well nourished, even in our own country. And food, and how that's related to climate is that the food waste that goes into city dumps produces methane, which is even worse than carbon dioxide and producing heat, keeping heat in the atmosphere. I think everything that we do in our personal lives, if we're able, in the car that we drive, and placing solar panels on our roofs, and planting trees and canopies, in our neighborhoods and nationally. These are just some things that we can do individually. So I think for everyone, I think there's something that we can do to reduce our own personal carbon footprint. And ultimately, we shouldn't underestimate the power of the individual, what we do and how we model for.
It may be cliche to say so, but a a plastic bottle thrown in the ocean in Seattle winds up in the belly of a whale in Mexico. We are each responsible, and Rabbi Sheldon Lewis is teaching us this lesson tremendously. Rabbi Lewis, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today, but more importantly, for the incredible work that you are doing. How precious the ground on which we stand, Jewish values that could save the earth. Rabbi Sheldon Lewis, climate activist, and remember, served this country as a chaplain in Vietnam. Rabbi Lewis, thank you so much for being with us today and for the work, the holy work that you are doing. This is Avodas Kodesh, my friend. This is holy work.
Thank you.
And we thank our good friends at HealthyLife.net, Linda McKenzie, the visionary founder, and Jay Cruz, the extraordinary producer, for making Spirit Talk Live part of the HealthyLife.net family for these last 15 and more years, and Doc Collins, who plays our theme song each and every week. So next month, October 16th, as always, the third Wednesday of the month, our colleague, Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin, Repairing Our People, also a distinguished career as a pulpit rabbi and most quoted for his blog, Martini Judaism, for those who want to be shaken and stirred, author of numerous books and scholarly essays. His new book is called Repairing Our People, challenging us to rethink identity, spirituality, and the popular culture and our place in the political, religious, and cultural battles of contemporary times. That's next month here on Spirit Talk Live, Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin. Until then, dear friends, be good and do good. Be sweet and be holy. Tune your consciousness to oneness consciousness. For in oneness consciousness, you are sourced to strive for the recognition and the reality of one God, one world, one people, the power and the promise of Eden on earth once again. That is why we invite you this month and every month to come on the journey, join in the quest. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick. This is Spirit Talk Live. Until next month, Shalom, Salam, Pax, Peace.